We are in an interview with Mr. and Mrs. Royal Hornbaker in their home in Garden City, Kansas, on the 12th of March, 1978. I wonder, Mrs. Hornbaker, if you would begin this by giving us a little of your own background, your family background, your parents and so forth, and where you grew up, and let's try to get your family in the picture.
I was born and raised at Darlow, Kansas, south of Hutchinson, 10 miles. Two of us in our family, two children, mother and father. She was Mary Keady, the daughter of G.W. Keady from Keadysville, Maryland. I went to school, a country school, all my life. Walked mile three quarters. Graduated, went to McPherson 3 years, the academy, graduated, and taught school 5 years.
Where did you teach school?
In the country schools around our home.
Now, when you said you went to the country school, what was the name of that school?
Zion School.
Where is that from, say, the Darlow Church? Or
2 miles south and a mile west. I walked a mile and three quarters every day, summer, winter, didn't matter, blizzard or what have you. We didn't have automobiles.
Carried your lunch, I suppose.
Carried my lunch in a half a gallon pail a lot of the time. We drank out from the pump, everybody from outside restrooms. One room school, 8 grades in the school.
How many kids would have been in that school at that time?
15 to 25. And we had no problems, very good discipline with all our teachers. Graduated and went to Liberty High School at Hutchinson 1 year and then 3 years to the academy at McPherson. My father thought that I would be better off, or he liked sending me to McPherson because he just thought it would be good for me as personal life. And then when I was ready to teach school that spring, I wasn't 18, so I could not sign my contract. My father had to sign my contract so I could teach school that first year.
Is that right? That's interesting that a father could sign a contract for school teaching, isn't it? You spoke about the Keadys. How many Keadys were there? You indicated earlier that Bernice is related.
Bernice is my cousin. There were, Grandpa Keady came west from Maryland, Keadysville, round in through that area, Hagerstown. And the Battle of Antietam was fought on great-grandfather's farm, part of it. Then they came west to Darlow and settled in that community. And there were about eight children in that family. Bernice's father and my mother were brother and sister.
Were most of the Keadys, did they stay around Kansas in?
All of them around there until they were married. And no one of them, Aunt Prudy was born in Maryland, and Grandfather Keady gave each child, when they got married, either $1,000 for a wedding gift or something similar that they would prefer, some land or wedding gift.
He must have been reasonably prosperous up there.
He was a surveyor, and evidently he was. And Grandfather Keady helped build the church at Pleasant View and also the Brethren home. He fell off the roof of the church at Pleasant View and died from the results of it.
Now, he was obviously a carpenter.
Yes.
Was he, he was working with that? He wasn't the head carpenter on this, or was he?
I doubt if they had a head carpenter, because they were a community there building the church, a big one-room church.
When did he fall?
It was about 1904, I would say. He died when I was either the year I was born or just soon after. Mm-hmm. And then grandmother died the next year. So.
Is that right?
But we had the old church where the men went in on one side and sat down. The women went in on the other side of the church and sat down.
You had the free ministry, I suppose.
At first, Bernice's father, Uncle Wilmer, was our minister, free minister for a part time, and then he also was, he and his wife took care of the old folks' home for several years before they moved away.
Well, Roy, let's bring the Hornbakers into this picture, then, and we'll get the two of you together, maybe.
Well, to start out with, I'm real happy for this occasion, and events have fallen into my lap since my retirement that have really been a pleasure in my life. I'm going back to our childhood days a little bit more. Norma's folks and my folks lived 2.5 miles apart. We were in different school districts, and we hardly knew each other until we got up into high school. And then, of course, she went to McPherson, and I went to Castleton, our high school. And it was in the later years of that experience and when we got acquainted a little better.
Now, where did you get acquainted, since you've raised that question?
Briefly, she would come once in a while with her Keedy cousins over to our school to be with them and visit our school. I believe that was about the first time that I ever saw her. Then, later, she was teaching our home school while I was going to business college in Hutchinson. And I would stop by the schoolhouse, and the kids began to think that this was getting pretty often every once in a while. So I finally put a stop to that hooliganism of her teaching school, and we became one. So in the meantime,
kids must have been right. It was getting pretty often.
And at the time of our marriage, our families were, a little bit, they had some differences over the years, and I was almost fearful of her father. But the day we got married, we went to church that evening, and it was raining like blazes when we got home, and he met us out at the end of their sidewalk with 2 raincoats and a lantern and sent us into the house, and he put our car away. So that broke the ice on that, and we were good friends ever after. We moved to Western Kansas the next spring after we were married in 1929, and we ran right smack dab into the dirty 30s and the panic that was had beset our country.
Now, when you moved west, where did you live?
We lived first at Copeland, Kansas, 7.5 miles north of Copeland. We were there for 2 years, and then we moved over to Montezuma, where my father owned a farm.
Now, did you rent at Copeland, or what did you do there?
That was my dad's place also. And like a lot of our other folks at that time, that financial crisis put him didn't put him out of business, but he had to liquidate some of his holdings, and the first place we lived was sold, and we moved to another farm of his where my brother had been living. And the Depression years got next to him, and he moved out, so we moved to that place. And it was there when Brother Earl France came to visit us in behalf of the college at McPherson. He came out to the field where I was running a 2-cylinder John Deere tractor, and I told him that he would have to go and visit with Norma and get the money from her, because the clothes that I had on were patched, and the patches were patched, and I had no money in my jeans at all. She had the money at the house, if there was any. I don't know what she gave him, but whatever it was, we thought possibly that McPherson College would not be able to operate without this little gift. Anyhow, we did help, and we've been helping benevolent organizations, our churches and our college and our Cedars Rest Home and other benevolent institutions ever since then. Now, into that, after my retirement, Dr. Snell approached me at one of our district conferences at Estes Park, Colorado, asked me to serve on a committee to study the needs of McPherson College. This terminated in a program of giving to the college. The Morrison brothers from Salina challenged this committee and the trustee board of the college to make a commitment double the amount that he and his brother were giving, which we did. And following that, we put on our $2 million fund drive for the college, and I was involved in that, which is one of the things that was one of the pleasurable events of my lifetime. Following this, the former president, Paul Hoffman, wrote me a letter, asked me to serve on the president's area committee. After thoughtful consideration, I decided that I would do that, and this has also been a great pleasure to me. I appreciate very much with this work. Then, locally here at Garden City, the Mennonite brethren here envisioned a rest home for Garden City, and I was asked to serve on the advisory board of that group, which I did for 2 years, and then they asked me to serve on the board of directors of the Garden Valley Retirement Village here in Garden City, and I consented to change over from the advisory board to the board of directors, and am now serving as chairman of that group. And so these three activities in my retirement years have filled a void that I didn't know how I was going to fill otherwise. We wanted to do some traveling, which we have done. We have been both to Hawaii and to the Holy Land since that time. We've taken trips in America to the Rose Bowl in the West Coast, to the Orange Bowl in Florida, and many, many short trips, mainly with our travel agency, the Sunflower Excursions, here in Garden City. This has been a joy to us also, particularly the trip to the Holy Land.
Let me ask you, if you would, you mentioned moving to Montezuma, and then we jumped over to your retirement. Now, what happened in there? Something must have happened if $5 provoked a family conference to the sort of giving that you've done in recent years, and I know you don't care to discuss all that, but what have you been doing? You've been in cattle business and farming, and where have you lived in those years? And
We lived at Montezuma from 1932 until 1949, in the fall of 1949. Our son had graduated from high school, and we wanted to get him into college somewhere, and he didn't care to go to away from home to school. And then there was another factor that entered into our lives at that time, too. We had been going to the Methodist Church at Montezuma most of these years, from 1932 to 1949. We enjoyed that very much, but it wasn't our home church, even though I taught a Sunday school class there most of the time that we lived at Montezuma in the Methodist Sunday school. A little sideline on that was that they asked me to serve on their official board at the Methodist Church, and they almost drafted me, and I did not reject it, but when the district superintendent came around and saw that a non-member of the Methodist Church was serving on their official board, that put a stop to that right quick like, and I didn't do that. So we went ahead and served there in a capacity of lay members for quite a number of years. The reason we moved to Garden City was to get Dean in Junior College here, to be able to attend the church of our choice. We hadn't been here a year until I was elected to the deaconship. The next year, I was elected church treasurer, and about the third year, we started building our new church. I was involved in that as church treasurer and chairman of the building committee, and this also was a pleasurable work for me. My wife, Norma, here has also been involved in our church activities here almost constantly, serving as a deacon's wife, deaconess, serving as a member of the Women's Fellowship, teaching classes, later being president of the Women's Fellowship. She is now involved in Church Women United here in Garden City. So we have served an active life here in our city.
I think it's obvious that you both have and do serve a very active life in the church and community.
Yes, I didn't mention that following my work on the fund drive at McPherson College, I was elected in 1974 by our district conference group to the trusteeship, trustee board of McPherson College. I've worked on that since that time, and that's another pleasurable thing in my life.
I still go back and pick up a little of your activity now. You moved from Montezuma to Garden City. You still farmed in the Garden City area?
No. When, after my son got old enough to decide what he wanted to do, and we have two children, a son and a daughter.
What are their names?
Carol Martin, Hornbaker Martin. She has a job in the post office here at Garden City, which is a wonderful thing for her because she is a handicapped child. She does not hear. And here she is holding a job in the post office of our town, drawing very lucrative wages, but doing an excellent job. She does not get involved in all the talk that's going on around her. She does her job. And I've asked the postal officials several times how my daughter's getting along. And they said, just marvelous. No one has to do her work for her. So even though she was handicapped, and we had quite a decision to make when she became school age, she attended 12 years. 16 years at our school for the deaf at Olathe, where she became qualified to do the work she's doing now. Our other child, Dean, is our oldest child, and he decided he wanted to farm with me. We lived in the Holderman Mennonite settlement near Montezuma. It was impossible there to buy land because whenever any land came up for sale, they would buy it. If one person couldn't buy it, several would go together and buy it, and the one would go ahead and pay for it. So when he decided to farm with me, we knew that we had to expand our operations, so we went to Greeley County, Kansas, near Tribune, and started farming there. And we have expanded greatly in that farming enterprise.
Now, where is Tribune? How far is that from here?
80 miles from Garden City, and we farm. We never left Kansas. My son rents one quarter of land right up against the Colorado state line. The rest of our farming is back this east from there and toward the Tribune area, and we farm quite extensively in that area.
What is it, mostly dry land? You do some irrigating, you have livestock, or all of it?
Our farming is all dry land. We have a cattle herd of from 100 to 120 cows. We have ranch land in Logan County on the North Fork of the Smoky Hill River. We have living water in our pasture constantly. So, since my retirement, Dean has taken over the operation of the ranch, and in our estate planning, we are turning grassland to him about as rapidly as we can. And our farming in Greeley County is all dry land, and I'm happy that it is, because under present conditions, the irrigation farmers are in deep, deep trouble.
I think so.
They are. They are the ones that are hurting. I have friends and neighbors close to us here that tell me that they have to subsidize their irrigation farming with their dry land farming. That's not a good thing to have to happen.
And probably just a beginning.
It could be. I'm not familiar enough with irrigation farming to
Well, I'm thinking about the water tables is the only thing.
The water tables drastically lowered.
There's a limitation somewhere.
We lost 2 more feet in our local water level in the past year,
is that right?
1977. So the future of irrigation in certain areas does not look promising in the future. There are other localities that have good water. In fact, the college, which owns a farm down in the edge of Seward County, have good water under their farm. Our church owns a quarter adjoining the college farm there.
You don't feel any particular obligation on the farm thing. You go out and watch it, but Dean takes care of it, and you let him worry about all the problems, I guess.
He worries anyhow. Last spring, when he lost 1,600 acres of wheat to the wind erosion, he was worrying quite considerable.
I think so.
But even though I am retired, I'm still in the harness. Good farm help is very difficult to come by. And Grampy, as I am known up at the farm, is called on every once in a while to pitch in and help, and he loves to do it.
Uh-huh. I would think so.
Yeah, that's right.
I bet so. I'm a farmer, too. You never get to the place where you don't like it.
You can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy.
That's the understatement of the year. That's for sure. We didn't have you develop something about the Hornbaker background. You commented sometime earlier about where your family came from and how you happened to settle in this area.
How much time do we have?
Oh, we have as much time as you have.
Well, maybe he wants some other.
Okay, we'll try to make this brief and to the point. My folks came from Germany in around about 1732 or 3, as near as we can determine. They landed in New Jersey, spread into Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Ohio, and our folks came to Kansas in 1879. My dad was born in Newton, Kansas in 1800. His father...
I'm sorry, you didn't mean that, maybe.
1880.
1880, yes.
I'm sorry about that. Yes, 1880. The next year, they moved over into Reno County in the little community of Darlow. When my grandfather first came over to see about buying a farm in Reno County, he stopped at a real estate firm in Hutchinson, and they told him that they had a farm 2 miles out from town. And he told them, I am raising a family, several boys, and I do not want to be that close to a town like the size of what Hutchinson looks like it might become. And he said, well, if you don't want that farm, we have another farm close to a community that is being developed by a group of Eastern, some kind of church people. And he said, that's where I want to be. So he bought a farm. He bought the southeast quarter of the section that the Pleasant View Church at Darlow, Kansas was located on. He raised a family there, built a nice big home on a quarter section of land, and how he raised those 9 kids, I do not know, on a quarter section of land. That's always been a mystery to me. I've asked cousins of mine, how did he ever do this? But he did. He was frugal. He had to be, to live in the great American desert, as Lewis and Clark called it at that time. My father, well, let's back up a bit. My mother was a Methodist when her and my dad got married. And consequently, I joined the Methodist Church, which was 4.5 miles from where we lived. When we couldn't go to, they drove horse and buggy, and when we couldn't make it to that church because of inclement weather or other conditions, they sent us to the Church of Brethren just a mile to the west. Finally, when they saw the need for keeping us kids in Sunday school, the entire family joined the Church of the Brethren. I was baptized into the Methodist Church through sprinkling. No, that's wrong. My mother wouldn't have the sprinkling deal because earlier in the Methodist Church, they immersed. And so the Methodist arranged that my baptism would take place in the First Christian Church in Hutchinson. So I became a Methodist in a Christian church and am now a Brethren. If you can figure that all out, you got me beat. But that's the way it is. What else do we need to know about them? Oh, my father became treasurer of the Pleasant View Church at Darlow. He was treasurer of the Lincoln Township Telephone Company. He was treasurer of the Lincoln Township Trustee Board. And he held these positions as long as I can remember until his retirement. Well, the school district was dissolved before that time and consolidated with another district. But until he became the treasurer of the school district, which was just 1.5 mile from our place, in 1914, when I was 7 years old. And he still held that position when he retired and moved to Hutchinson in 1949. So I have said he was a man of integrity, and he was. He was one fine dad.
Well, that's a good tribute. Now, the other Hornbakers, how many of them were in the Darlow, his brothers?
Well, that family grew up on that old, it wasn't a homestead place, but it was a place that my grandfather bought when they moved over to Reno County. My dad always told me that he has 2 sisters, and each one of those sisters had 7 brothers. And he wanted to know how many there were in the family, and this confuses some people, but We know there were 9 children in the family. There were 2 sisters, 7 brothers. They were all good farmers and businessmen, lawyers. 2 of them ran general merchandise stores and were farm machinery dealers. 1 became a lawyer, and they were all good businessmen and took care of their business and were all successful.
Now, most of that Hornbaker family, where are they now? They're all over, I suppose, now.
They're all over the United States.
And they're not particularly concentrated in the Hutchinson area.
Not necessarily. Not very much anymore. Most of them have moved away, and several of those farmsteads have been moved away, and the farms in going together with other farms, and we have fewer and larger farms now than we did at that time. In 1939, my dad's oldest brother, J.E., we called him Uncle Ed, ran a store at Clifton, Colorado, and he formulated our first genealogy and history book of our family. In 1959, Uncle Vernon, V.W., who was involved in district and church work and the Cedars for many, many years, brought it up to date again at that time. In 1974, our family reunion group asked me to chair a committee of 5 to update our genealogy and history book again, which we did. And we find family members from Maryland to California and Oregon and Washington and all the states in between. Last year, I was appointed historian for our family group, and I have found Hornbakers living in Kansas that I never knew existed before through communications here at Garden City and other information. And I have written to these folks and am getting wonderful letters back, and we have traced 3 different groups of Hornbakers in the United States to the original place that they came to when they came across the pond in New Jersey.
Is that right?
So wherever you find Hornbakers, which is an unusual name, you can pretty well know that they're all related if you go back to that point. This has been a pleasure for me to do this.
Of course, we could always hope that that family genealogy and others like it, we might get a copy of it to put in the, if it isn't there, in the manuscript room at the college library. So we'll be, when you get this thing all up to date, let us have a copy of it, and we'll try to keep it on file, too, for more detailed study.
That won't be hard to do, because when we had printed this last genealogy and historical book of our family, he printed more than we had need of, and I have copies of that genealogy here in my home.
That kind of thing can help.
And there are our secretary also has any number of these books, and so we will make one available for that museum.
Well, we have a brethren room there, a sort of a manuscripts room, and we try to keep all the records of any of the brethren we can get, genealogies and everything else, so it would be very welcome.
This is great, and I will say this in conclusion, that my wife's family and our family have been in the Brethren, Church of the Brethren, for very many, many years. And we've loved the work there. We love the church. We love our Lord Jesus Christ.
That is good.
The Keedys, great-grandfather was a surveyor. And at one time, he owned the present site of Philadelphia. That is the very small part where Philadelphia was first originally built. And tracing back about 10 or 15 years ago, maybe 20, the deed had been lost, or somebody maneuvered them out of the deed, and we lost our contract with getting their land that would have rightfully belonged to the Keedys at that particular time. And, of course, then that we lost all our... We still have some folks back there. When Carol, our daughter, and her husband made the trip in the, back there to visit, they stopped at Hagerstown, I believe, or Keedysville, and went through the graveyard, the cemetery there, and found some old names of Keedys on the tombstone, and she took a picture and brought back to us.
Now, the fin frock, you commented about your grandfather, fin frock. If we could get a word here about where they tie in.
Well, they came from Pennsylvania, then I think to Missouri, and from Missouri they came out to this Brethren settlement there at Darlow. I have very little recollection of them, excepting they lived on the quarter section that my folks lived on. My grandfather, Keedy, gave my mother the 80 acres when she married my father, and Grandfather Finfrock owned the other 80 acres, so that when my grandfather and grandmother Finfrock, as a child, they drove a horse and buggy. In fact, that's all they had. We went to church as a child. I remember going to communion with them. We'd go up on Saturday. I'd spend Saturday there with them. They cooked the meat in the big boilers on the little old cook stove. The men fixed the tables and so for communion. They would bring me home. That was my early recollection of going to communion with my grandfather and grandmother in the horse and buggy days.
When the home at Darla was right next to the
yes.
church there, did the home have any impact on the church or vice versa? How many people were there? Weren't they relatively younger people at that time in the home, or how old would they have been? I had the notion at one time that some people came in there that would have been reasonably able to did some work on the farm. Were they been any able to do any work?
They were not young people. They were all over, I would say. I was a youngster. I would say, to me, they were old, probably 60, uh-huh. 65. But the men, the older men, did all the farm work. The women helped in the kitchen and the garden. They supported themselves with that. And the community, every year, had a butchering day and went in and did the butchering for them for the year.
Now, I don't know whether I'm asking whether I, this is a fair question, but who would have come to the home then, these older people? People that didn't have kids to live with, or just people just decide to come because it's a good place to go? Do you have any reaction on that? Who were the people who would have been there?
Most of them, as I remember, perhaps, I don't know, being a child, maybe they did not belong to the church, but it seemed to me they were all brethren, but they didn't turn anybody away, as I understand, and they didn't expect them to pay their way. They were taken care of by assessing the churches over the district to help pay their way.
Did the people of the Darlow Church generally like the home there? Did those people come over and worship at the church, or... Do you have any reaction on that?
Oh, yes, many times. We had many of them would come to church all the time as long as they were able to come. Many of the men, or some of the men, would go out around to the farmers and work for them in the summer or busy times. And I don't think, especially when Uncle Wilmer got to be their superintendent and Aunt Nellie there, we spent many days there, and those old people, we loved those. We played with them, we visited with them. We didn't know any different.
Mm-hmm. And I dare say that they loved the younger kids
yes.
coming in, too. But that
May
was
I speak
right.
on that?
Yes, do.
The community loved these people. They owned 120 acres, I think, of farmland there also. And in the later years, especially after combines came into being, the community farmers, or the brethren farmers there, would go in and harvest that wheat. So you can see the good relationship that was evident there in the community. They loved the people, they loved the home. Quite a few of our local people there were very disappointed when it had to go to McPherson and become the Cedars.
How many people would have been in the home in its peak years?
Well, I would imagine 15 or 20.
I was going to say from 20 to 25, but that's either figure would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I suppose it would vary some.
They came, and most of them, as I remember, stayed there until they passed away. Many of them are buried there in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And we just thought of them as part of our people.
One more thing I want to add. That church has been sold and moved away. The church did own the cemetery, but it was a different organization. It was a cemetery by itself and the church on its own. We have now endowed that cemetery association with an enough endowment that we can have perpetual care there at that cemetery. Norma and I got right into the middle of that thing too and contributed heavily to it. And then a family who had folks buried there who were wealthy people, and I'm not going to mention the name, but they endowed that by, I think, around $18,000. So the endowment amount that we have there is very sufficient to keep that cemetery under perpetual care from now on out. I thought we ought to know that.
That's good. Let me ask one more question. I'm conscious of the fact that you're running against it, running against the time schedule. We didn't ask you about some of your reactions at McPherson, and I think you said you might have a thought or so about Prof. Hess or Moeller. What would you care to say, Mrs. Hornbaker, about those people or others who were around the college when you were there?
Well, of course, my reaction to Professor Hess, he was always very methodical. If we didn't get in there and get seated at the right time, the door shut, and that was it. But we learned. I was afraid of him. I was scared. But at the same time, I learned. But now going through Professor Moeller, I took every class I could take under Professor Moeller because I loved him. I took my first class was botany, and he told us the first one that would get out and find the flower, first flower in the spring would get 5% added onto our grades. So I walked the railroad tracks a long time and made that first five. And then one other interesting thing, lots of things about Dr. Moeller, but I took methods in management under him in summer school. And I had a boyfriend, John Friesen. We went to class every day, and Professor Moeller said one day something to the effect that he wished we'd sit on the front row. Well, we were kids, but John and I did. We sat right up there on the front row. Every week, he had a new saying on the board, a little quip of some sort. And John and I wrote them down in our book. On the final examination day, he asked us to quote all those that we could. I think John and I were the only ones that got most of them right. I still have those in my book. And Dr. Moeller has been an inspiration always to me.